In Minnesota, one of the things that we find is that, boy, the garage doors go up, the cars go in and the garage doors go down. And for many of us, we're not connecting with our neighbors at all. So we decided we better devise a plan so that we can meet our neighbors. And so when this last spring came around, why, we took a fire pit out to our driveway. We set it up on the driveway, and I put several lawn chairs around it. And through that process, I thought, well, we'll see who's going to be walking by, and we'll just strike up a conversation with them. So we went out, we started this fire, and my wife thought I was crazy. She said, nobody's going to come to your fire. And I said, well, we're just going to let them come by. If they want to come sit with us, that's fine. So I would go out, I would start the fire, and in the middle of the summer, I mean, the weather was just gorgeous, but they would smell this wood, kind of like popcorn, up and down the street. People are walking, they're walking their dogs, and they're all coming around. And the next thing we know, people start coming by, and I would say, hey, what kind of dog is that? And we would engage them in conversation. As we began to do that, it's kind of like they would stop cold. It's like, you want to meet my kid? Come on. So they would come onto the driveway, kind of walk up toward the fire. That's sure a nice fire. And so we would begin a discussion, whatever else. I said, sit down in one of the chairs. Sit down. You got a minute. They would sit down. We began to meet our neighbors. We would begin to know them by name. We began to talk with them, visit with them. And so one of the first things we've been doing was we would just bless these people. Some of them we didn't even know. We would watch them walk by. So we would strike up conversations with people as they're walking down the street. And so the next thing you know, they're stopping and they're coming over and they're introducing themselves and sit down for a minute. So they would sit down with us. We would have s'mores for them if they wanted to do that. And we would begin to find that we would begin to really create good and very fond relationship with these people. Got on a first name basis with them. And so we had that opportunity not only to bless them, but then also to fellowship with them. One of the interesting stories we had, there was a couple that was walking by, and we said, and she was actually carries a bag and she picks up garbage while she's out on her walk. And so I said, what's the bag for? And she come up to tell me what the bag was for. It's to collect garbage. I said, well, sit down and visit with us. We said, how's everything going? Is there anything we can pray with you about? And she said, yes. My daughter, who's been a widow for the last year and a half, she's in her 30s, and she lost her husband to cancer. It's a really sad story. She's got a little 4-year-old girl, but she needs a job. Would you pray that she'll get a job? And we said, sure. The next week, they come by again. They said, hey, not only did she get the job, she loves her supervisor, she's learning the ropes, and she's really doing great. Thank you for praying. So it was pretty amazing. So in the middle of a fire pit party, we call it, we had about 10 people over, and she announced to everybody there that she says, hey, if you have these people pray, you better believe things are going to happen, because we've seen 2 miracles happen in our family. We actually pray for our neighbors. I bless the people on the left. She blesses the people on the right. And we have about 20 to 25 houses that we pray for regularly. And we just pray blessings over those homes and the opportunity that we're going to get to meet them. So I think one of the most exciting things is that God just uses ordinary people in ordinary ways to reach the world. And I really believe that it's a divine appointment that God wanted us to live here in this neighborhood to reach this neighborhood for Him.
That's the man who led me to the Lord 40 years ago this year. He came into my salon and he started talking to me, and I was open, and he explained to me how the gospel worked in a way that I had never heard explained before. And I took 2 weeks to sort it out, and then I prayed to receive Christ. So he is my spiritual father. He lives in Apple Valley. And I think it's interesting that he and Ann, every evening, they go through the neighborhood praying. She prays for people on one side, he prays for the other. He just kind of was praying, how do I reach people? We are talking today about the fifth discipline of Christians. True Christians, strong Christians, have 5 things that they do on a regular basis. The first one is Bible. Read their Bible, they study. They are able to fight and defend for the word. The next thing they do is they pray, and then they worship. We talked about worship and fellowship the week before last. This week, we're talking about witnessing. Now, witnessing is nothing fancy. All witnessing is watching for the right opportunity and then using it to tell others about Jesus, about the cross, and about salvation. Do you realize that the Southern Baptist denomination, after years and years and years of growth, they are really in a serious problem of shrinkage right now. They are losing more and more people. They did a big study, and they found out that this generation of Southern Baptists do not witness, and they will not invite friends to church. And so now the whole denomination is having huge problems. Friends, this is what we do as Christians. And I'm going to talk today about how we do it, because it's important to know what to do, but it's also even more important to do it for the right motivation and to do it with the right understanding. The Apostle Paul was a chameleon. You know what a chameleon is? One of those little lizards that used to be able to buy them in a pet store. When I was a kid, he had this little lizard, and if you put him on a brown thing, he would turn brown. You pick him up, you go over here, put him on something green, he turns green. And I put him on a fir tree out in the front yard, and I lost him. So I don't know whatever happened to him. But a chameleon is able to change colors to adapt to his environment. And the Apostle Paul was just like that. 1 Corinthians 9:19, he says, though I am free, I'm a free man. He says, I'm not a slave. I don't belong to any man. And there were two types of people back then. There were slave and there were free. He says, even though I'm free, I make myself a slave to everyone. Why? To win as many people for Christ as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew so that I could win the Jews. To those who were under the law, and he's talking about the religious, the Jewish law, I became like one under the law. He says, I became an expert in the law, though I myself am not under the law, but I did it so that I could win those who are under the law. To those not having the law, the Gentiles, I became like one not having the law. Why did I do this? So as to win those who do not have the law. To the weak, I became weak to win the weak. I become all things to all men so that by all possible means I might save some. I do all this for the sake of the gospel so that I may share in its blessing. When you take a look at the book of Acts, you'll see all kinds of examples where the Apostle Paul adapted to his environment so that he could communicate the message of Jesus Christ. In Acts chapter 17, he is in Athens. He's in Athens because he had to leave another city because they were going to kill him. So sometimes the message didn't go well. Sometimes he was rejected in really difficult ways. But it didn't let him down. He went to another city, and he was there roaming around, and he was looking at all the different statues of the gods in Athens. And he saw that they had one for Zeus, they had one for Dionysius, they had one for Hera, they had all these other gods. But he saw that they had one statue that says, to the unknown God. And right away, the philosophers were there. He started talking with them. They said, tell us about your ideas. And he said, I'm here to talk about the unknown God. This statue you have right over here, you already know of him, but I'm going to tell you more about him. So he adapted whatever was around to use it to talk to the people that he intended to witness to. There were times that St. Paul took a Roman beating, even though he was a citizen, and he could have avoided it. As a Roman citizen, he did not have to be arrested and beaten. He would preach the gospel, and sometimes there would be a disorder that would happen, a mob, and Romans hated nothing more than disorder. And with the Roman legal system, they would pick you up, and they would bring you in, and you were always presumed guilty until proven innocent. It's different than what we have. They pick you up and they assume you're guilty. Now, one of the things that they did to help you get the truth out was they would beat you. And their idea was, well, if we beat a guilty man, he deserves it. But if we end up beating an innocent man for the purpose of gaining the truth, then it's no big deal. The truth gets out. That's what's really important. And so when they pick you up, you're guilty. When they beat you, they're beating you to help. And you could be innocent, and yet it was no big deal for them. With Paul, he could stop them before they beat him and say, I'm a Roman citizen. And if they beat a Roman citizen knowingly, they could be killed. They could forfeit their own lives. And so there were times when he did tell them, hey, you know what, I am a Roman citizen. There were other times where he let them beat him. In Philippi, he allowed himself to be beaten so that he could gain a hearing. In Acts chapter 16, instead of escaping prison when the Lord sends an earthquake to destroy it, Paul and Silas stay so they can have a chance to witness to the jailer and his family, and those people actually end up believing in Jesus Christ. And so it was worth the beating to him, but he used his environment. Ed Silvoso and Roger Lane have come up with these ideas about witnessing that make it extremely simple. What Roger Lane does is, first of all, he befriends. He says, I do all I can to be friendly and approachable toward those God sends my way. I mean, he gets the fire pit. He puts the chairs out there. And he says, when they come along, he saw the woman with the trash bag. He goes, hey, what's in the trash bag? She comes by every day. What's in the trash bag? She says, it's trash. I pick up trash when I go out on my walk. Oh, well, let me see what you got. And he gets up and goes out and looks in her trash bag. And that gives him a chance to talk. She comes up on the driveway to show him, and he says, come on over here. I'm Roger. Have a seat. And he starts talking to her. He had another guy that would come along, and he had this little dog that he didn't recognize. He said, hey, what kind of dog is that? He said, it's a sheep poodle or something that sounds like swearing in another language. And he says, well, I never heard about this dog. Come here, let me see him. And he brings him up. He goes, if they come on my driveway, they're mine. They come on my driveway, they're mine. Now, see, that's how we're supposed to be. He does not always present the gospel on the first time. Oftentimes, he will wait months until there's a felt need or until the conversation comes around. And what has happened is, people bring their grandkids, they bring their kids. They look forward to sitting in Roger Lane's chair around the fire and eating s'mores. And he is winning his neighborhood to Jesus Christ. So the first thing you do is befriend. Somebody said, I'm quoting myself here, I said this. And this is a good quote. An angry Christian is a lonely Christian. It's true. You know, there's a lot of stuff that happens, even in this day and age, that we look at and we go, man, the world is just sliding right down the tubes fast. But you know what? We should not be angry about this. The Lord told us this was going to happen. And the Lord also told us when these things begin to happen, you need to be busy because he's coming back again. An angry Christian is a lonely Christian. Our anger does nothing. But if we demonstrate love, if we demonstrate a willingness to enter into people's lives, to talk and to listen, you would be surprised how an opportunity will open to talk about Jesus. Paul said, to the Jews, I became like a Jew so I could win those Jews. Who can reach a pagan hairdresser better than a Christian hairdresser? Who can reach a pagan truck driver better than a Christian truck driver? Who can reach a lost mother better than a Christian mother? And happiness is the key. If you're like, oh, well, how's it going? Are you walking with the Lord? Yeah, devil's after me. Praise his name. It's so hard. If you're one of those people, you're down all the time, that's not going to attract anybody to Jesus. It just makes it look like you're depressed. They say, I have this gift. What is it? Depression. Do you want it? No. Friendship is at least as important as the message you are communicating. Sometimes people can't hear the message because it's so loud and so negative, they can't even hear the message. How you say it is heard more clearly than what you say. A woman named Margaret, every day she would go to the bathroom cabinet, open it, take out a huge bottle of castor oil. I don't know if you've ever had castor oil, but it's of the devil. And then she would head to the kitchen and get a big tablespoon. Now, at the sound of the drawer opening and the silverware rattling, her little dog would split. Her little dog would go under the couch. Her little dog would go in the closet. Her little dog would go hide in the shower behind the curtain. That dog would go anywhere. Why? It's because Margaret was convinced that her little dog Patches would have strong teeth, a beautiful coat, and long life if she gave him a big spoonful of castor oil every day. And so, as an act of love, every 24 hours she would corner him, pin him down, sit on him, and hold him while she poured that castor oil and shove it down his little throat. Every day, every 24 hours, poor little dog got this treatment. One day, after doing this for years, she's struggling with the dog. She caught him in the kitchen there on the tile floor. And while she's struggling, he kicks the bottle over and it spills all over the floor. She jumps up and releases him because she's got to get some paper towels. And as she turns with the paper towel, she looks. And the dog has not run away. The dog is licking up the castor's oil with his tail wagging. Who knew? He loved castor's oil. He just didn't like being force-fed it. That's the way we need to witness as Christians. We don't want to hold them down and shove it down their throats because, quite frankly, the truth of the gospel is sweet. The truth of the gospel is life-changing and it is positive. And if you give them half a chance to taste it, 9 times out of 10, they end up liking it. We don't want to be shoving it down people's throat. And so we need to befriend them. We befriend them, we don't force them. Number two, we give them a chance to belong. People are lonely and you can't judge by how they look. You say, well, what if they have families? Hey, there are people in families who are lonely. And we need to provide an environment where it is safe for them. That's what that fire pit's all about. That's what the fire pit's all about. Over the months, they have discovered that Roger is an excellent conversationalist. He is down to earth. He works in finance right now. He has raised over $300 million for Christian causes over the last 40 years. He's very, very good at giving money away to the kingdom. But he lives very modestly, and these people come and they sit down. He doesn't talk about money. He talks about hog farming because that's what he did at first. If it doesn't work, he talks about selling insurance because he used to sell insurance. He talks about whatever they are interested in talking about. He is so good at providing a context of belonging. The Apostle Paul was told that he would witness before kings and powerful people. Sometimes you might say, well, God, I want to witness before important people like politicians and leaders in government. That's good. If you want to do that, the Lord will probably put you in prison. And you can minister. He will give you the environment so that you can minister to the people you want to minister to. That's what happened with Paul. He knew he was going to witness to Caesar. How did he do it? He became a prisoner. And it was while he was in prison that he wrote all of these great letters. Do you realize that the nature of Paul was that if he had not been incarcerated, we wouldn't have 1st and 2nd Corinthians. We wouldn't have Ephesians. We wouldn't have Galatians. We wouldn't have Philippians. We wouldn't have any of that. God had to put him behind bars. Why? So he'd get him to write the scriptures and also so that he would witness to Caesar, witness to Antipas, he would witness to Herod's descendants, all these important people he never would have gotten to see unless he was a prisoner. You may not be aware of it, but there are Christian Palestinians. Most of them live right in Nazareth, but they live other places as well. They're Christian Palestinians. They are really difficult and lonely people. They're in difficult circumstances because they're not accepted by the Muslims. They're also not accepted by the Jews, and they have to travel sometimes across these checkpoints. And so they're treated like a Muslim Palestinian by the Jewish soldiers, and then they're treated like a Christian by the Muslims. Well, there's a Bible college professor named Johanna Katanako. He pastors a small church in Jerusalem, which has a lot of persecution. Now, the Israeli soldiers who patrol the area are always looking for terrorists, and so they're always trying to put up checkpoints. You might be going to renew your license, and you got to go into the Israeli area to do it. And you think you're going to stop for an hour or two, but oftentimes you can be there for half a day or more just trying to get through. And it doesn't matter if you say, I'm a Christian. It doesn't matter at all. Yohanan tried and failed in his attempts to love his enemies. The Israeli soldiers' attitudes of asking for his identification card and interrogating him and messing with him. He said, I cannot love these guys. And he realized that the love of Christ demanded that he try to love them, but he couldn't. So he began praying, and he said, Lord, you've got to show me how to love these people. And once he showed him how to love him, he said, now show me how to witness to them. So what he began to do was he began to carry copies of a flyer with him that was written in Hebrew and English with a quotation from Isaiah 53, the Hebrew Bible. And at the top of it were the words, real love, printed in Hebrew across the top. Every time a soldier stopped him and asked for his ID card, he'd hand him his ID card and he would hand him that flyer. And these Israelis began to be so interested in these flyers. They would see him coming and they would brush him right on by. And he goes, no, no, I want to talk. And he would stop and he would talk to them and hand out flyers. He even has had some of those guys ask for copies of the flyers and they would give them to the Palestinians, the Muslims coming through, because they would rather have the Muslims be Christian rather than being Muslim. And so here it's amazing how he opened up his heart. God helped him to love the people that he was really frustrated with. And now he looks for the checkpoint so that he can do ministry. Instead of it being a detour, instead of it being a frustration, God can use those things to lead people to the Lord. Have you ever had your car break down beside the road? And you just feel so bummed out. My car broke down. What am I going to do now? The Lord will send somebody by, or the Lord will send a tow truck guy or something. And you get a chance to present Jesus Christ to this person. It's amazing how that works. The next thing we do is we bless. Roger and Ann would go down the street and they would pray blessings on the homes of the people that they were walking by. Do you realize the power of blessing? Don't you realize that when you say, Lord, I pray that you would bless these people, the Lord will dispatch angels, not to do our will, but to do his will. And you simply are opening the door for him to do his will. When you say, Lord, bless this person, well, if the person's not worthy of a blessing, the Lord doesn't worry about that. He knows what to do. But if the person is not saved, and you say, bless this person, the Lord can open up a blessing for that person. The Lord can help with all kinds of needs that you don't even know about. That's why you need to have your eyebrows up, need to have your smile on. You need to be a person filled with blessing, not with cursing. And another quotation that I did not say, but it's pretty good. An empty stomach has no ears. Isn't that good? It's from Africa. An empty stomach has no ears. I thought that was really good. You've heard of Maslow's hierarchy of need. Right up at the top, it's a pyramid. And right up at the top is food. They got to have food, then they got to have safety, then they got to have shelter and all these other things. You cannot spend all of your time talking to a starving person and telling them about the importance and the difference between Calvinism and Arminianism. You cannot talk to a person who, they're in the middle of a divorce. Their life is caving in. They're struggling with huge rejection. And you say, well, let's talk about Trinitarianism. Do you know the word Trinity isn't in the Bible? You see what I'm saying? We meet people where they are, and felt needs are a big part of that. Roger sits there around that campfire, and they don't care about theology. They do care, though, about their children. That woman said, she says, my daughter is going through a divorce. She lost her job. They prayed. She got a new job that week. Then she said, pray for my other daughter. What you didn't hear was the other daughter got a good job as well. Last of all, we proclaim. You would think that you persuade first. No, you do not persuade. The first thing you do is proclaim. You proclaim in love. Jesus said, once again, the kingdom of heaven is like a net that was let down from a boat into a lake, and it caught all kinds of fish. When it was full, the fishermen pulled it up on shore. Then they sat down and collected the good fish in baskets, but they threw the bad ones away. This is how it will be at the end of the age. The angels will come and separate the wicked from the righteous and throw them into the fiery furnace, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, when I think about that and the horror of it, I can't imagine leaving behind anyone I have ever met. I want to bring everybody with me who can. July 6, 1881, there was a heavy thunderstorm down near Boone, Iowa, and it filled up this valley, and this Honey Rock Creek became a raging torrent. And it was 11 o'clock at night when the railway people from the station in Mongoina, Iowa, decided to send an engine alone down to cross this bridge. Now, this bridge is like 10 stories high, and it's all made out of lumber. These are the 1880s. And it's 11 o'clock at night, 1881, over Honey Creek. The pusher locomotive was sent from Mongoina to check out track conditions. Unfortunately, right about 11 p.m., the bridge got swept away, and the engine collapsed. And there was one guy that was immediately swept away. They never found his body. Another guy died, but there were two of those conductors who lived. Now, right next to this bridge, and I know where this is because I camped by this bridge many times nearby, and you can see the bridge right there. And what happened was when the river swept out, the rails still stayed. And this little girl who was 17 years old, her name was Kate Shelley. Her father worked for the rail company, but he was gone working. Her mom was there with her sisters. She takes a lantern. She heard the crash. And she takes the lantern and she goes out on that bridge, and she looks down and sees 10 stories down. She sees this steaming wreck, and she sees one guy hanging on for life. She doesn't know, but there's another one nearby stuck in some bushes. And she says, stay there, I will get help. But the thing that really scared her was she saw the two rails going out over space because all the structure was under was gone. And she knew that she had to get to this other station just down the road because at midnight, a train with 200 people was coming through. And she took that lantern and she went along on those slippery rails and she actually almost fell. She dropped her lantern. And the only way she could get through was by seeing what happened when the lightning would flash. And she knew she could get across. And she got across and she ran miles. And she made it to the station with only minutes to spare. And that night, she saved lives. Now, friends, we are like Kate Shelley. We understand that the bridge might look good, but it's washing out. Our nation looks fine, but it's sick. There is a wave of immorality that is beginning to erode the foundations of our society as we know it. And it's in a time like this, we know disaster is there. We understand the potential for salvation or for loss. And this is when we need to be the hands and feet of Jesus. And we need to reach out and grab that net and pull it up with all kinds of fishes. We'll let the Lord sort out who belongs where. But it's our job to be busy in these last days. Let's pray.